Derry is where it's at this week. We were all very hotly anticipating the Four Corners episode about Murray Goulburn and dairy prices. What did we learn?
So the investigation looked into what Murray Goulburn knew leading up to cutting those prices for farmers and then telling its shareholders that it wouldn't be meeting the profit forecast that it had laid out. That all happened back in April, and Four Corners talked to a range of farmers, and then it had briefly heard a little bit from the Murray Goulburn chairman, Philip Tracy. Essentially, the program put forward a case saying that officials knew more than they disclosed publicly. That's something that Philip Tracy hit back at when he spoke to the Country Hour earlier in the week. He did so on Tuesday following Monday night's Four Corners. And he says that the company put forward everything that it knew as soon as it knew that things weren't going as expected.
Our obligation is, as soon as we know, we must act. And that's exactly what we did. We described at each point along the way where we, in our public disclosures, exactly what we were seeing in the market. Unfortunately, things turned against us, particularly in that late in the year, that February to April period.
Now, similar to what happened earlier in the year when this first happened, while the debate is there around the processes, it quickly then moved into politics. And so by the end of the week, you're no longer talking about Murray Goulburn and what it knew and what it disclosed to the public, or let alone what Fonterra did with cutting prices to farmers. It just descended into this political point scoring where you had both sides of politics accusing the other essentially of mismanagement.
It really is pretty extraordinary, because I was sort of struggling to think during this week of other industries in which prices have gone badly, and these are industries that are deregulated. They're, you know, involved with big major international companies, and it's global trade like dairy, where government has felt the need to intervene so publicly and to such an extent.
Well, grain markets are tanking at the moment, and everyone's talking about this huge oversupply, and yet no one's really coming in and saying, well, the government needs to buy tons and tons of wheat and suck up some of this oversupply that's out there to help prices increase. But it is something about the dairy industry that's lending itself to this talk. And I guess because you've seen the federal government say they're going to offer dairy support loans for farmers dealing with this crisis, that it is becoming slightly more political. But on those loans, you've got farmers that are coming out and saying that the financial counsellors that they're dealing with, the people whose job it is to help farmers apply for these loans, are telling them not to bother because it's all too difficult. And that's why people like Tim Boone, Stephen Spokes, didn't even apply for a loan.
Well, he told me not to bother because I wouldn't be eligible to get it.
You've got lobby groups like Farmer Power saying that councillors are privately telling them that the scheme is designed to fail, but they won't speak publicly. Alex Robertson from Farmer Power says because it is government who is funding these roles.
We're hearing it all the time. One thing you learn when you work for the government, you don't fight the hand that feeds you.
So the theme of the week has been that this $555 million loan scheme that the federal government put up to help farmers through this is it's not working. You've seen now lobby groups come out and argue against it. You've had state governments say that it's too strict, it doesn't allow people to get in. And you even saw Liberal backbencher Sarah Henderson. She is from Corangamite in southwest Victoria. She came out this week and said, The government needs to review how it's running this criteria, and it needs to be improved so more people have access to this money. But the Federal Agriculture Minister, Barnaby Joyce, rejected all that. He said the problem isn't with the eligibility criteria. It's simply a matter of the states taking too long to process the loans.
It's taking 25 days to turn around a loan in Queensland, but apparently Victoria is taking 47 days. I'm saying to Victoria, why is it that one state, Queensland, can turn them around quicker? Why is it that New South Wales can turn them around quicker? In fact, why is it that basically everywhere can turn them around quicker except Victoria?
Is it perhaps that most of the farmers are in Victoria, so there's a whole lot more to process?
Look, that's to some extent the Victorian government come out and said that what Barnaby Joyce is saying is out-of-date figures, that there was a suggestion only one person had been approved for these loans. The Victorian government says that it's actually been six and that there'd been about 48 applications and there were still more coming through. But Victoria's Agriculture Minister, Jala Pulford, says the reality is these farmers don't want more debt, which is what this loan scheme is. They simply want cash in the form of Centrelink payments.
Their insistence on dragging this back to a conversation about farmers taking on more debt, I think, suggests that they still just don't quite get it. What our dairy farmers need more than anything right now is cash to put food on the table.
So has the fallout continued with a focus on the company at the heart of this?
Well, that's the case that Joel Fitzgibbon, the Labor agriculture spokesman at a federal level, is putting forward. He says that both Labor and the coalition could go together to Murray Goulburn and act on a united front and say, Murray Goulburn, you are meant to be a cooperative. Why are you keeping your profits that you've declared, the some 40-odd million that they're expected to declare this year in profit, when that money could be given back to farmers? Joel Fitzgibbon argues that he actually wrote to Philip Tracy, Murray Goulburn's chairman, saying that he could trigger this extraordinary circumstances clause that would allow the profits to go to the farmers ahead of the shareholders. Although Joel Fitzgibbon suggests that Philip Tracy wrote back saying that the current crisis doesn't actually allow for that.
I wrote back to him and said, well, you've lost your CEO, your CFO, your prices collapsed, your business strategies have fallen over, your farmers are struggling, they are now carrying debt. If these are not extraordinary circumstances, what are?
Barnaby Joyce and Malcolm Turnbull met with Murray Goulburn leadership earlier in the week. On Monday, they will both meet with Fonterra as well. It's the other company that have cut prices to farmers, but hasn't been so much talked about.
No, it hasn't. And then there's what they're calling a dairy symposium, which is an all-in, essentially, in Melbourne next week also.
The love-in, where I think there's a lot of people suggesting that a lot of talking happening, but on the farm, people are wanting action and some support to get through this period.
So we're not the only country that's experiencing difficult times in dairy, mainly because anyone exposed to the global dairy export market is suffering. What's happening in the United States?
Some really interesting debate is happening there, because you've got 60 members of Congress earlier in the month wrote to the US Agriculture Secretary calling for emergency assistance for dairy farmers. And then this week we saw the American Farm Bureau join those calls. And they were suggesting that Zippy Duval is the Farm Bureau's president. It's such a great name, isn't it? Something you would associate with America.
It is fantastic. It sounds like a soft serve
exactly.
of some sort.
Fitting, I guess, for dairy in this case. He's suggesting that the government could buy cheese. So he says you could spend $50 million, and that would buy you about 12.7 million kilograms of cheese that could then be given to government programs, could then be donated to food banks as a way of cutting into that oversupply. Because when we talk about this oversupply of dairy, it's not about fresh milk. It's about huge oversupply of milk powder, which you're seeing in Europe and even in parts of America, and cheese. Cheese production is really high at the moment, and there's an oversupply that needs to be cut into if these prices are to increase anytime soon.
I just think we need a humongous fondue vat.
I mean, I love cheese. So maybe there's more I could do to contribute.
You and I will do our bit, Brett. We will do our bit. Some happy news out of Queensland, where it's been pretty dire with very little rain in the last few years, but optimism.
Finally, something really lovely for that part of the world. All that rain that we saw some weeks ago now, it wasn't drought-breaking, but it really was winter rain records for some parts, particularly around Longreach. It's meant that you're starting to see some short-term grass shoot up and offer a bit of feed, and that presents an opportunity for farmers then to get stock onto it and then get their businesses going again. But as we've talked about a lot this year, it's the reason beef prices are so high. Lots of farmers destocked because there just wasn't enough feed around. So now they're having to travel far and wide to try and get stock back onto their land, which they hope can, like I said, get their businesses going, because some have been 12 months without stock. That's what it was for Dominic Burden from Macklin's station near Longreach. He's recently purchased 2,500 Merino ewes to get his business back going again.
We've got our first good rain 2 months ago, so we've got quite a bit of herbage which we sort of want to take advantage of, and potentially we could probably carry more, but at this stage it's a bit of a hedge, I suppose. So I guess it's an early move with a modest number of sheep is probably how I'm thinking of it at this stage.
I think it really summarises farmers, particularly in that part of the world, this cautious but optimistic ultimately, and given all the time that they've been through to still be that optimistic, it's a fair character trait.
It is amazing. It is. Now, I know it's been a hard slog for the lamb industry over the years to try to convince American palates to enjoy lamb, but it seems they're cutting through.
You can thank the hipsters, Edwina, these young millennials in New York and their fancy burgers. They're changing trends. Some figures out of the US suggest that about 20% of US menus have lamb on it, and there's hope that that could change, that this an older generation that really wasn't interested in mutton went off lamb altogether. That's starting to change. And Neil Doherty is an American. You might not guess it from his accent, though. He's a US meat distributor with Sysco. And he says it really is these younger people that are developing a love for lamb that could be promising for Australian producers.
So I think we're bypassing the mutton age. I think now you're going to start seeing lamb showing up in on hamburger offerings in these gourmet hamburger bars and items like that. So I think it's going to be something that people want to try for taste. And also if you're mixing it up with stuff like harissa and trendy ingredient profiles, I think you're going to have an easier time to get it across the plate.
Grab yourself some Ras El Hanout and get yourself to a burger joint.
A chickpea bun, potentially, just really.
I'll behave. Surely not. Maybe. Now, I always, you know, sort of feel very sorry for people in the city who have an endless commute, but this commute takes the cake.
It's a fair old journey, 1,400 kilometres. Jim Bean lives on King Island. So when you've got to visit family in southern Queensland, you have to start getting a bit original with how you might do it. So he and his wife hop in a light two-seater plane and make the journey north, although the moral of the story seems to be really limit those liquids that you're putting into your system.
It's about 10 hours flying time. My wife and I fit in that, and away we go.
Do you fit enough petrol in that thing to get you to Queensland?
No, but then that's fine. The distance you fly, anybody will tell you, depends on your bladder, not on the fuel. And my bladder's good till Shepparton.
My bladder is good enough to get me to work on the bike. So I don't know how I'd go with such a big journey on a plane, though.
Yes. Are we there yet? Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.
Brett Worthington with a wrap of the news, abc.net.au/rural, where you can also subscribe to a weekly update of rural news.